So welcome. My name is Robin Stefani. I'm the Technical Training and Communications Manager for StealthBits Technologies. StealthBits is a cybersecurity software company that focuses on protecting an organization's sensitive data and the credentials that attackers use to steal that data. And yes, I read that. I use the MadCap software Doc2Help for my content management system. I've successfully single-sourced all of our documentation needs through this tool, and today I'm going to give you a deep dive into using Doc2Help. So I'll start a little bit with my background and explain why I chose to use Doc2Help. We'll cover the best practices for creating Word files in Doc2Help, because Doc2Help is a Word-based program, and then we'll actually dive into creating a Doc2Help project from a single document, and then how you can expand your projects by adding additional documents. So a little bit about the background behind why we went with Doc2Help. So when I started at StealthBits, we had basically documentation available to our customers through PDF files and CHM files. And the ask at the time was that we provide documentation at the website level through HTML outputs and other types of documentation available options. So the problem was that the content was coming from lots of different sources. Those PDFs were typically generated by technical product managers because a customer asked for it. The CHM files were usually collaborated on by developers, and the catch was that the content between the two sources didn't necessarily agree or match with each other. So my first job was to try to unify that information. But when you combine that with no real management system available to me, I needed to find a tool that could work within the skill set that I had. Now, what I didn't mention when I introduced myself was that I spent 15 years as an educator in middle school environment before I became a writer. So Microsoft Word was where my skills lay. I was actually teaching a course on Microsoft Word, so I'm very proficient in it. So with that understanding, I went looking for a software program that could meet my needs and still allow me to work in Word. And I found Doc2Help. Doc2Help is an add-on into the Word environment, so you actually get ribbons added to your Word documents that are Doc2Help specific when you install the software. So you use all the tools that Word provides, plus the extra tools that Doc2Help provides, and you can generate any of the many output options, target options that are available. So I could do my CHM files, I could create PDFs, and I could generate interactive HTML pages as well. I've been using Doc2Help now for a little over 6 years, and it has continued and will continue to meet the needs for my company, which is a fairly small company. We're up to about 200 employees now, but we have a large customer base. So this really opens the door to taking that first step into content management and single sourcing. So if you're going to work with Doc2Help, you have to understand Microsoft Word and the best practices for using Microsoft Word. So for that perspective, if you've used Word before, then you know that Word uses heading styles to generate out those table of contents and other types of reference materials. You can use them for linking. So Doc2Help uses them for similar purposes. It uses page breaks. It does generate off table of contents. You can use related links. Basically, any type of navigation is going to be based off of those Word heading styles. So you have to intentionally use your styles that are built into your templates. Nice thing about it is if you have a corporate template that is customized with your colors, your branding, your message, your font styles, you can use all of that and generate it through Doc2Help, bringing out those styles directly as they are. So you can see here down at the bottom is my corporate template style list, where we have the very specific fonts and colors used by our company. The one drawback is that Doc2Help is limited to five headings, so you can go five deep. But if you really stop and think about it, you don't want to go any deeper than that in content writing. Your readers are going to get lost long before they ever get to the point of getting to a heading six. So if you've gone down that rabbit hole, you need to kind of stop and redirect and come up with a different direction for your content. Maybe do a little bit of reorganization. You can also take advantage of several doc-to-help features that I'll get into in a few moments. A couple of things to be aware of is to avoid using headings with no text between them. I inherited several documents where they were using headings as bulleted list ideas. So there'd be a heading, and then there'd be another heading, and then somewhere under that heading there might actually be some content. Well, if every heading causes a page break, that's not going to work real well for your outputs. So you really need to watch for that. If you find yourself doing that, I recommend using a fake header, which you can actually program into your style sheet. You just don't use the heading style. You name it anything you want. I actually named mine fake. Just select it, turn it on, and it looks and feels like a header, but it doesn't act like one, so it doesn't get picked up for those table of contents, lets you put more information on a single output page. So doc2help, again, I mentioned once you've installed it, you end up with several extra ribbons in your Word file. So here we see the doc2help ribbon, and in the middle there, boxed out, we've got several options, several formatting options. These really allow you to bring your content out in a new way, to bring interactiveness to what normally and has traditionally been a flat content. So those fake headers, I usually apply my collapsible sections, because those collapsible sections allow me to keep related sections that really don't stand on their own all together on a single page, but gives the reader the control over which section they might expand and read or collapse. And if you are generating both HTML outputs and PDF outputs, well, the HTML have the interactive capabilities, but the PDFs will flatten it out and look just like it would have in the Word document. Conditional text allows you to control which content is available to different outputs or for different audiences. So most common use case I have heard here is, okay, you're creating a manual. Maybe you have an internal version and an external version. I actually have two versions of our troubleshooting guide, one for our support engineers and one for our partners who do a first level support for their customers. So that one, the one that's for our support engineers is only going to be made available to them because we don't want to give out all of our tricks. So that's going to be conditionally tagged. I use it on a regular basis for the next item, actually, specifically, interdocument linking. So if I have a project with more than one document in it, I can link directly between the two documents. Well, that's really great if I have it on the website where all of my documents are built out into a single HTML file. But in my in-product help, where only the user guide exists, I can set that link to instead download a PDF. So if you're in the product, you click a help file, you want to see the install guide because it has some additional information for you, well, you don't want to have to go to the website and log in to get access to the install guide. You want to be able to just download it. You already have the product, so boom. I changed the link, conditional statement. If I'm building out for the website, you have the direct link to the section. If I'm building out for the in-product help file, we have instead the link to a downloadable PDF. Multimedia, that's my other picture here. The ability to really embed any kind of interactive videos, any kind of animation, animation tools that you might have that help your customers, you can embed them directly into the file, adding that extra touch of written and audio, which is a real good learning tool for your environment. Also, if you're a little bit busy, like most of us tend to be, the ability to auto-index without having to think about it is a really nice feature. There are many others on there, but those are the ones that I use the most. So I'd like to spend a little bit more time on collapsible sections. Step up here where I can see my screen better. So there are many use cases for collapsible sections. Remember, you want your content to be standalone. And there's a lot of cases where you need to draw attention to something, but it's not going to be a standalone type situation. The information needs to be with something else. This user interface here on the left is an excellent example. Event filtering configurations. I have a product that monitors activity. So if you log into your computer, it monitors that. If you go over and access a file in another location, it's going to monitor that. But in activity events, especially in the back-end world of code, there's a lot of noise type events. So the idea of this UI is that it's going to filter out that noise. But you have to choose which noise you care about and which noise you don't. So our users are going to come in here and they're going to select and check. There are now 9 options in this window. When I started working on this product, there were 3. Very easy to work with. So I just kept it flat, you know, no problem. Each release, we've added a few more. Now we've got options that can be just enabled or disabled by a checkbox. We've got some options that are dependent upon selecting another option. So I can't check the successful AD user logins if I haven't chosen to exclude noise events. So, you know, you've got some dependencies here. Down at the bottom, I have a whole other set of options. These are actually the newest ones that were added in this last release, where you have to go configure them, which means opening an entirely different window to configure the option, and then you can come back and enable it. So there's a lot of information that's going on in some, almost no information in others, and you end up with a lot of scrolling on the part of your customer. So if they want to go find out about the authentic events for selected accounts, which is that very last option, they have to scroll through 9 sections, some of which are one-liners, some of which are little paragraphs, and some of which are pages of content before they can get to the information they want. So by setting each one as a collapsible section, my user has a high-level summary telling them exactly what they're looking at, and then they can expand the filter that they actually care about. So if that filter has one sentence, great. If it has a whole long section of step-by-step instructions on how to configure it before you enable it, great. They have everything there right in one location. They don't have to click around to find it. Another great use case, which I don't have a picture for, is I was writing a series of steps, and I came to a point where I hit step 3, and step 3 had 3 different ways to complete the step. Okay, well, maybe I should break it into 3 different sets of steps. Maybe I should just explain all 3 options right there. Usually I let the user interface make those kinds of decisions, what makes the most sense for the end user. This time I came across a case where you had 3 options, and you could use any one or any combination of all 3. And, well, you can't break that into different sections. And when you put it like this, it ends up into a very long scrolling section where that one step can actually cover 2 or 3 pages on a PDF. Well, I can't control the PDF, but on the website output and on the CHM outputs, I can put all 3 of those options into a collapsible section, summarize at the step level exactly what it is that they need to do so that they know which one they want to expand. Are they going to use option A, B, or C to complete that step, and then they can move on to the next step? So the collapsible sections actually ended up in the middle of a series of step-by-step instructions. Worked out very nicely. So a couple other things to know about Word. Bulleted lists and tables do cause a little bit of grief if you're not careful with where how you handle them. And honestly, I blame Word for this, Microsoft, not DocTheHelp. So bulleted lists, they have a lot of preset configured bullets in Word. If you've ever used it, you click the bullet, it's usually that round dot, real ugly one. So for my writing prior to using DocTheHelp, I had taken the time to go through the options, and I had configured our template to use the winding arrow. I put my first document into a DocTheHelp project, generated it out, and all of those arrows became Greek letters. Okay, that's not going to work. So let's do a little bit of testing. I actually just created a blank Word file with one header, used every single bullet Word had available in its out-of-the-box version, and found 4 that worked well. And it wasn't that DocTheHelp didn't know how to interpret it. I really blame the inability of browsers and Word to communicate well. It was when it was posted on the website that you would see these Greek letters showing up in odd places. And I finally made the connection. They were connected to those winging arrow bullets. So just takeaway here, take a moment, make sure that what you're choosing actually renders as you expect in your various outputs, because every output was a little different. For tables, my recommendation is to keep it simple. So for this one, you want to not merge cells. You know, in Word, people are really good at using Word and manipulating Word. They love to merge the cells. They can do some really creative things with the tables and regroup and group. But when you generate that out for an HTML file, I'm not sure if this is Word or Doc2Help or maybe just a clash between the two, but the row column alignment gets skewed. And so where one thing was all on a row, now they're kind of off-centered and you've got random cells just appearing off to the side or in the middle of your table. It looked very funny. But with a few simple clicks, you can actually make that appearance without actually merging the cells. So on the left here, I have my Word document, and you can see my stale users analysis task on the left here. Three cells are highlighted the same. By simply adding the shade to the center cell, I removed the border lines. I have my grid views showing, so you can see the dotted lines where the cells are. When I generated it in the output, it had the same look and feel, but my cell alignment is perfectly aligned. So no merging required. The amount of time that it took me to remove two lines and add a shading was maybe about a half a second longer than it took me to merge a cell. So you don't really lose any time. You keep your integrity of your table intact, and you can still take full advantage of the Word's table features. So let's dive into our first project. I'm going to start by creating a project for Doc2Help off of one Word file. And I will say that while I had the opportunity to do this as a live demonstration, I actually designed the PowerPoint deck to be a training tool so that if you've never used Doc2Help before, you can come in here and follow the slides through each of the tasks that walk you into creating your first project and the steps to building it out into more advanced. So I can show you a live project after if you're interested, but I wanted you to have something that you could take home and be very useful. So I decided to stick with the PowerPoint slides for today. So before you create, now for me, you can create a Doc2Help project from a blank Word file. No problem, that's totally capable. Typically, I already have my Word files completely finished by the time I start looking into a Doc2Help project. And since most of my projects already have all of my documentation, at this point I'm just editing. But I still, when I do need to start a new project, I usually start with a created or existing document. So take a moment to look through that navigation pane. You can see here on the left, Word does have a navigation pane. It's an often little known option. It's under the View ribbon of Word. I always keep this visible for me. This is how I know that my navigation and my organization and structure in the document is exactly as I want, because remember, every single one of those items in the navigation pane becomes its own page in my output. So I depend highly on this pane. I always keep it visible. So I'm going to take a moment before I start my project and make sure that there are no blank sections. It's very easy to accidentally have a blank header. If you look at somebody's Word doc and they've never really used headings before, you'll see blank sections. So you want to make sure there are no blank sections. You want to make sure that any sections that you intend to collapse. Yes, ma'am.
Is the blank section going to show up in
the Okay, the question was, is a blank section going to show up in the navigation pane? And the answer is yes. It actually just looks like a blank spot. So there will be Word, 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 nothing, nothing. Word, 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 nothing, nothing. Yeah. In the Word file itself, it's actually very hard to spot because all it is a hidden hard return. So if you have a hard return that has that heading style, it's not going to show up in the Word doc, but it will always show up in your navigation pane. So it's a really easy way to do a quick check on that option. So again, any sections you don't want to be standalone pages, you've set that fake heading to so that you can maybe apply collapsible sections or just have it flat. But still all together on the same output page. And finally, DocToHelp does build its own table of contents. I learned that the hard way. The first output had two table contents, one right on top of each other. So you want to take the time to remove any existing table of contents that you have in your file. Once you've done that, you're good to go. I typically start creating a Word file off of a blank, or a DocToHelp project off of a blank Word file, because you can't open a file if it's already open. You get some problems there. So starting with a blank Word file, once you've installed DocToHelp, you'll get two things. You'll get a DocToHelp ribbon that will show up in every Word file, whether it's in a project or not, and you'll have this option on the File menu for DocToHelp. So if you come to File, down at the bottom there on the left hand, you see the little arrow. You can select that. Then in the middle, the DocToHelp pane, you're going to open Create. And then off to the right, we're going to create a new project. And when you do this, the new project wizard opens. So the first thing you're going to do with your new project is you're going to name it. Word to the wise, the name of your project becomes the file name used in the folder structure. So when you install DocToHelp, it automatically creates a My DocToHelp folder in your user documents location. So if you click the documents in your interface, that's where the My DocToHelp projects are located, and your project name becomes both a folder name and a project name. So if your company has any kind of naming conventions, or if you think it through and realize you're actually going to have a lot of projects eventually, I have one project for each of the products that I provide documentation for. So there's a minimum of about 8 or 9 projects that I'm working with regularly. I need to know which one I'm going into easily and quickly. So the naming convention really does matter when you get into large environments. You can also set your DocToHelp project. Again, what you put for the name is automatically going to become the folder, but you can rename that folder. So if you want the project name to be different from the folder name, you have that option. On a side note, DocToHelp does offer team authoring options where you can, once you've created a project, you can store it on a file repository, web repository, or a team foundation server, and that gives you the ability for your team to collaborate on the content. Go in and check in or check out documents, check in and check out projects, opening the door to multi people using the same projects. Word to the wise, don't use a DFS server for that file repository. DFS servers are not DocToHelp friendly. All right, so moving on, just kind of a quick highlight of the wizard pages here. So off the bat, what language are you working on? There's several language capabilities with MadCap software, and so you want to set your default language. This is the language that you are working in. This is the language that your master Word files are in. So for me, that's going to be English. Source template. This is your mapping file. All of your Word files have some template that they're based on, that they're connected to. Most of us, if we don't think about it, it's just going to be the default one that Microsoft sends out. For my company, we have our own custom template with all of our styles built into it, so I want to put my style template here. What the source template does is it allows DocToHelp to map between the styles on the base Word file and the styles that it's going to use in the target templates. Even if they're the same, you still need that location so that it knows heading style looks like this, so that when I interpret it over to my output, heading style 1, which looked like that, now looks like this. So it's going to map between the two. And last on this option, we have our default target. Now again, personal preference here. I always start with my hardest target. So the most complex target that I'm going to work with is the one I want to be my default, because if I can make that one look right, then all the others fall into place. So in my scenario, that would be my NetHelp output, which is going to build the HTML5 for the web browsers. And that's where I'm going to start. Now, as I mentioned before, you can start with a blank Word file, or you can start with an existing one. I always start with an existing Word file, so I'm going to go through the import wizard. So the last page on the new project wizard is going to ask me, am I importing or am I starting from scratch? If you select import, when it completes its job of creating the project, it will automatically launch your import wizard, where you identify, okay, is this on a local location, which would include a file repository that you have access to, or is it in SharePoint? Navigate to it and select your option. You can actually import several documents at once, but for the purpose of this presentation, we're just going to import one document. Your project launches and that document opens. What's different from a normal Word environment is this new panel here in the middle. So remember I said I always keep that navigation pane open? I keep it open in my Doc2Help projects too. But the Doc2Help panel comes into the middle. And we end up with now three ribbons. The Doc2Help ribbon, which you will see in every Word file once you've installed. And now, because this document's in a project, I'm also going to see a target ribbon and a project ribbon. Target ribbon is going to house the target-based features and properties. So that's looking at the output. Am I generating for the website? Am I generating, excuse me, am I generating for an end product help file, or am I generating that PDF that my sales guys are always asking for? The project properties are going to impact all of your targets. So no matter which one you have, no matter what documents you have, the properties in that section are going to impact the entire project. So I know there's a lot on the screen, but I want to show you that on the project ribbon, which is the one selected, off to the left here, it's the third button in, is going to open our project settings. And all of these windows tend to pop up just right on top of the Word file. Just wanted to give you that big picture, and then we'll take a closer look here at our project settings. And remember, again, this affects everything in the project. Most of these settings were already configured when you went through the creation of your project. So we have our project title there at the beginning. We've got our location. We've got our default template, which is your source template. And there are several other options here. You can get very granular with the configurations of your settings, even controlling how it looks when it gets any type of print option or page relationship. Now, I mentioned again, my choice for a default target is going to be NetHelp. You can see here in the NetHelp properties, so I went to the target ribbon, I selected my target properties, and I opened the NetHelp properties. So you select the target type on the left, and there is a dynamic help, so you always have that ability to quickly find what you're looking for. Now, these properties are only going to affect that HTML5 that I'm posting on my website. They're going to control the style and format, kind of the overall skin and feel of the product. And the key piece here that I always need to take time to configure is the caption, because by default, that project name becomes the target name, and the target name shows up at the top of my output. Well, if I've named it SI because that's my abbreviation for my product, maybe that's not what I want to see at the top of my output. I want them to see Stealth Intercept, not SI. Who's going to know what SI is if that's an internal reference only? So I want to take the time to make sure that my caption is exactly the way I want it to be. Through here, you can also navigate to Theme Roller and control your skin. So let's see, did I have a slide for that one? I think I do. There we go. So you can open up the theme editor, make choices about the layout, the format. This particular one is a responsive format, so it would work nicely on mobile phone devices, tablets, as well as computers. And set your swatches or your color font combinations. And there's the ability to customize it, but Doc2Help comes with a lot of pre-built ones. So if you're not comfortable with this right out of the gate, you can use the ones that they provide. If you need to have very specific coloring and coding, they can take you to the Theme Roller, where you can create a jQuery style sheet with minimal coding efforts. You just have to know your color codes and your style codes, which most of us have written down somewhere in our company. All right, once you've brought in your documents, The first step is to build it. You want DocTheHelp to recognize all of the content in the Word file as being a part of the project. So there are two build options. You can just build, which will incorporate text only. It's going to take less time to build this version. But if you want to get all of your fonts, all of your formatting options, anything that complex stuff that's in the background, not just the words, then you need to do the rebuild. It does take a little time, but it guarantees that all of your modifications are grabbed by the build. One last warning that I did forget before I changed my slide. Make sure you've saved the Word file before you try to build. If you make changes and you rebuild or rebuild, it only takes the last saved copy. So anything that you have on your screen that's not yet saved isn't going to be picked up. That took me a little bit of time to discover, where's my edit? I know I made that edit. Where did it go? I forgot to save that stupid document before I clicked the build button. Okay. My favorite, absolutely favorite, is those collapsible sections. I've talked about them several times already. This is how you do it. So you open your Word file, you go directly to the section you want. So here I have status bar. It is a fake header, so it's not a real header, but it looks just like all the other ones, right? Select the section I want, and then I'm going to go up to my ribbon. On the DocTheHelp ribbon, I'm going to click the collapsible section. I've got a nice little red arrow there pointing to where you use that, and this pop-up window is going to appear. On the pop-up window, and that's down here, sorry about that, that's down here at the bottom now, the top line in whatever you selected becomes the heading of your collapsible section. So you'll see status bar is my fake header. It shows up as the header for the collapsible section. I can see my content. Notice that the picture did get replaced with a little slash mark, so the preview isn't going to show you everything, but it will show you all your text, so you know exactly what's going to be included in that collapsible section. You can also choose to expand or collapse. That doesn't control the user's experience. That just controls their introduction. So if you have two or three sections, and everybody's probably going to use the first one, you can actually have that expanded by default and all the other options collapsed, or you can collapse them all or expand them all by default, your choice, but your users, your readers, still have the ability to expand and collapse at will. And you can see off to the left how that appears once it's generated out. So you have up at the top of the screen, just above where it says Chapter 2, below my breadcrumb, there's that option for them to actually toggle between expanding all or collapsing all. And then the collapsible sections are down there at the bottom. Now, if you were in my session yesterday on customer-friendly user guides, you'll remember that in my method of writing, you never want to leave your reader hanging. So you don't ever want to bring them to a point where there's no place to go or they're not sure what to do next. Related links are a great way to do that. So, again, I'm showing you the entire project here. In the DocTheHelp project panel, down at the very bottom, I did not draw attention to it, related links is selected. So when I select that, I can expand out my topics panel from my project pane, and that is highlighted at the top there. And this will list every single heading that I have in my document. Again, those heading styles come into place. It tells me which document it's in, which is important if you have multiple documents. You can easily filter this by typing in the filter row at the top of the topics panel to find what you're looking for easily. And literally, it's a drag and drop exercise. You find the section you want to link to, and you drag it to the section on the left that you're going to link from. So here I'm linking from Windows File Servers is going to be a link on the Exchange Servers page. So if you're looking at Exchange Servers and the information about Exchange Servers, the More link will take you to the File Servers information so that you can now monitor both options, Exchange and File Servers, not just one or the other. In the middle there, you'll see what those custom-related links are. By default, any subsections are going to be listed. There's a close-up view of that. Sorry about that. By default, any subsections are going to be listed as your More links. So in the section that I have selected, Stealth Intercept Agent Information, underneath that one, it's going to already have domain controllers, Exchange servers, Windows file servers, and the very long NAS header there. All are going to appear as more links. But what if I want to give them additional information? What if I want them to be able to travel to the analytics from that location? Well, I can customize that by dragging and dropping that over, giving my reader a few more options. Word to the wise, don't go overboard. It's really easy to say, oh, well, they might also want to go this direction or that direction. Make some executive choices to keep your user's experience fluid and moving nicely. All right, so I've generated my output here on the left from a single document. I've got my self-intercept user guide, and it's ready to post on my website. But my developers are waiting for me to give them a CHM file that they can actually put into the product so that every time you click that little help button, it will pop up. Very easy, only a couple more clicks, and I'll have two outputs. So first I need to go into my target panel and select a new target output. I'm going to select HTML help. That might be misleading. That's the old name for CHMs. It's been inherited through the times, so you have to just know HTML help equals CHM. In here, again, the theme is going to control that skin, what it looks like, how it feels, what's the layout, is it going to be three-pane, two-pane, accordion style, and the catch-all here is the base name. So you'll see in the top there, we have our base name. Now, my developers had a very specific file name in mind, so if my CHM file was not named stealthintercept.chm, they couldn't find it from their help link. So for every single one of these CHM files, I had to find out from my developer, what did that file name need to be? It couldn't be changed after the fact because everything is built off of that file name. It had to be built into the properties here. So that's the big setting that we needed to configure here. But again, all of these settings give you a lot of granular control. Most of them are pretty good in default mode, but if you have special needs, you have the ability to tweak as needed. Once I start adding target outputs, now that I have two output options, this is where I start using those conditional statements. So remember I said before that my conditional statements tend to be on my hyperlinks, when I'm hyperlinking to another document. So here off to the left, and I have a zoom in on the next screen, we have this section that's linking to actually another product. There's another product that integrates with this one. There's a relationship between the two. So if you're using that integration capabilities, you'll want to go to the SAM install guide for additional information. Yes, I'm using the abbreviation. It's much easier to say than StealthBits Activity Monitor. With this, you'll see at the top there, this is what it looked like originally in my document. I had one link, took you directly there. If it's in a PDF, I'm going to want to download another PDF. But if I'm on the website, I don't want to go to a PDF. I want to go to the other document that's hosted on my website. So I can use this conditional statement option. And here in the middle, you can set this to be based on platform, target, or attribute. There's a lot of flexibility with conditional statements. For me, I typically stick with the targets. Keeps my life just a little simpler. So I want to set the link for a PDF to be in my HTML help output so that if I'm in a product, I click that link, it'll download the PDF. But if I'm on the website portal, then I want to set this to open that other website portal. So I'm going to change the hyperlink. Just copy and paste the sentence, really easy. Set the two hyperlinks and attach conditional statements. Now, in addition to my CHM file and my website version, my HTML help 5 file, I also need to generate a PDF. Now, I know this product has more than one user guide, and that means more than one PDF. So I don't want to overwrite my manual target option. I want to save as and create a new target type. I want to name it specifically so that I'm not guessing at which PDF I'm trying to generate. So I'm going to name this one PDF admin because it's my admin user guide. Generate that out. That PDF admin is now going to show up in my target list. And when I get to my install guide later on, I have the ability to do this again so that I have two PDF outputs, and I always know without any question exactly which output I'm selecting to generate. So the manual target, its key, again, is going to control that skin. So your template is extremely important. It's going to control the look and feel of the PDF file. Now, manual target also generates a side effect of a clean Word doc. So most of our Word docs you've seen, they're full of little notes and comment boxes and conditional statements, inline editing. I need a clean copy that I can put in our internal library for each release, and this is going to generate both a Word and a PDF. The catch here is to make sure you name your base file. So all of our file names start with StealthBits underscore, our product abbreviation underscore, and then the name of the file. So it's a very specific naming convention that we use in-house. That means that I need to take the time to set that naming convention here as my base name file. You also have capabilities of customizing that title page. So if you have a picture that your company uses, an image of some kind, you can embed all of that right into this interface. And that's it. Just a few clicks, rebuild between each one, and we've taken one document. We've got an HTML output that I can post on our company website. I've got a CHM file that my developers are building straight into the product. And I have a PDF file that I can post for download purposes also on our website portal. Not a lot of work. Once you set it up, again, I chose my most difficult option first, that NetHelp file, and then it's just a case of selecting and setting my properties and doing a rebuild to generate all those other options with very little effort. This particular project, as it stood for what we covered, would have taken maybe 10 minutes to build all three outputs. So it's actually pretty quick. It gets a little bit more complicated when you have really long documents. I have one project with a Word file that is almost 800 pages long now, which is extremely large for a Word file. That project tends to take about 20 minutes to generate. But even that's pretty good when you think about all the stuff it's processing to get to an HTML output of that 800-plus page document. But let's add some documents. So I already told you that I'm working with a user guide, and I need to add that install doc that will be coming to me once the product's ready to get to installation. And you can very easily add documents to any project without too much trouble. But I did find that when you start adding documents to a project, the table of contents gets very messy. So I wanted to clean this up. Looked for a way to do that. I was working with our website team at the time on another project, and I thought, let me create a landing page, something that would be a general location for everybody. I tried to keep it all together and make it look like it was a single document in my output, and my support engineers came running to me and said, "Robin, I'm looking for the installation guide." And I said, "It's on the website." "I looked. It said user guide." I'm like, "Yeah, it's in the user guide on the website." So I gave up on that. Apparently they were too set in their ways. And I created a landing page that basically lists all the documents that are included for this product. Now, Stealth Intercept actually has two consoles. It has an administrator console and it has a reporting console. When you combine the installation guide, and eventually we built out some custom dashboards that integrate with other people's products, this became potential for a great big mess. But with the landing page, I was very easily able to lay it out exactly what documents were available for the product, and they could navigate quickly to them without going, again, too far down the rabbit hole. So instead of just importing in my install doc, I'm actually going to be importing in two docs because I also want to grab in that landing page, which I call an intro doc. And so your import wizard is going to work exactly the same as it did before. We come in, we select both of those documents. I did mention that you could multi-select documents when you import. Bring them in, and now my project panel has three documents listed. Take a moment, put them in the order that makes the most sense for the project. You know, if I have a landing page document, that should be right at the top. So I bump my intro doc up, my install doc. Well, people are going to use that before they go to the user guide, so let's put that second. You can control the order. No matter what order they followed by default, you can put them in the order that makes the most sense for your product and your documents. So when you add new documents, if you have conditional statements for the various outputs, you need to take some time to actually set conditions on the documents themselves. So we knew the user guide, which we've already walked through, is being used in three of our outputs. I want to make sure, you can see that on the left, the right, got my left and right mixed up. On the right, you can see the original document. I want to take the time to set all three of my existing projects to tie to this document so that when they generate, they know this document is associated with that output. But my new documents, well, to start with, they're only going to be associated with the NetHelp file because I want them included in my website build, but they're not going to be in that CHM file and they're not going to be in the PDF file. Then I go and set inter-document links. So I already mentioned the conditional statements if I were linking to an external document. This is allowing me to link between two documents in the same project. And again, based on my output. So if I'm getting a CHM file, I want to link to that PDF. If I'm going to the NetHelp file, I want to link to directly to the section. So at the top, you can see where my section is pulling down a PDF. I make sure and tell my reader what section they'll want to find in that PDF so they don't have to go hunting for the information. But down here at the bottom, I can link directly to the SI system alerting window instead of to the installation document. Once you get everything in, you've done a couple of rebuilds, because you'll want to rebuild as you go and check, make sure when you add new content that it's coming the way you expect. Like any software, it may not do what you expect, but it's definitely do what it was coded to do. So you want to make sure that what you believe is happening is actually happening. So you're going to come in here and you can create or a target-specific table of contents. There's an option that lets you reset. You can see on the left how all the target, all the headings are listed out there in just the order they appear in the documents. But if you go to the option in the right side, you have the ability to regroup them. Remember that landing page had, I actually created a heading for each of my documents, and I can put all the major heading one sections under that option so they have quick and easy access to each of the chapters for that document without having to go hunting for them by name. And so that landing page really gives you the ability to clean up the table of contents. Once I've generated out that NetHelp build and I made sure everything's working right, now I can build and add in my other outputs. So with my install doc, the only other output I actually need is a PDF. It's going to be packaged up with the binary so that when a customer downloads the new software, they're going to get the software and the install guide. So the only other output I need for that one is a PDF. I'm going to create a new manual output, set my conditional statement so that it associates to the PDF install, and boom, I've got four outputs off of two documents. In the end, this project ended up with 7 Word documents. One is an HTML, that CHM file that's built into our product. 2 are NetHelp outputs. Now, why would I need 2? Well, because our reporting console is actually browser-based. So if you click the help file in the reporting console, it's going to open up in another tab on your browser. And that's just the reporting guide. And then I ended up with 6 outputs, one for each of those Word documents that were PDFs, not the intro doc. The intro doc is only going to show up in my website build. So very easy, not a lot of extra work. This grew significantly over the years that I've been working on documenting this project into a rather significant project for our set of products, but it meets every need that the product has asked for, product managers have asked for. I can give them all of their contents, I can keep them all up to date for each release by editing a single Word file, and that's it. Single Word file, click, generate, click, generate, got my content, post it where it needs to go. All done. Are there any questions? Quiet group. Well, I'm going to take that to mean I answered all the questions. But if you do have any questions, my contact information is at the end of the slide deck. Feel free to reach out to me at any time, as I mentioned again at the beginning. I've been using DocTeHelp for longer than it's been a MadCap product. So when they acquired me as well. And I will be happy to assist anyone who's getting started with DocTeHelp. If you are limited in funds and stuck working in Word, which isn't a favorite of tech writers for software, but it is a very accessible software tool, DocTeHelp is perfect for providing you all the options that you need to meet the customer needs, the engineering needs, or any other technical product manager's requests can very quickly and easily be managed through this, allowing you the single source capabilities in an environment that is easily accessible.